This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, Chris Graham and Rod Mullins. We're going to talk some NASCAR here on a Monday, and I guess we have to start with a lot of talk about 200. And Rod, I would agree with you. This win this past weekend, the 53rd win for Mr. Busch on the Cup at the Top Series. But all this talk about 200 makes it seem like he's done something that sounds like what Richard Petty did, but you know, it does. I'm not sure. I want to get your thoughts on that, Rod, as we kind of wrap up last weekend.
Well, I'll just tell you, I'm married to a math teacher, and I was never really good at math, but to me, the math doesn't add up. It may add up with 200 wins total with all of the series and everything else that he has that he's participated in, but it's not 200 Cup victories. Even going back to the Grand National, when it was called the Grand National before being named Winston Cup, that Richard Petty won 200 races in. We're talking about two completely different achievements here. And for me, Richard Petty's 200 wins has more significance than what Kyle Busch's 200 win maybe means to everybody else. But I know Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, most of the social media outlets out there have plastered this all over the place about Kyle Busch winning 200 races and 200 wins in these races, and to me, it just doesn't add up. It just doesn't figure whatsoever, and it's also, I think, a very poor attempt at a slap in the face of Richard Petty.
What do you think the number would be if we added up all of Richard Petty's wins outside of NASCAR, outside of the main circuit? You know, the dirt tracks that he did on his way up, I'm sure that he did while he was in NASCAR, on weekends off, whatever else. Have you seen a number like that? I imagine that number be really, really high.
Yeah, I would imagine it would probably be at least another couple. I'm saying probably at least about another 100-150 wins, maybe. You got to remember in there, Richard Petty at one time boycotted NASCAR because they would not allow a certain engine into the ranks in the NASCAR, and so he boycotted. He actually took off and went to the drag racing circuit for a little for a time being, racing a Barracuda, and the car was called something about, I think the car was called illegal or something was what it was called, and you know, he raced there for a little while, and then he came back into the circuit, and so he missed the better part, I think, almost a year out of that. And then there were other races too that, you know, there was one race he should have won at Daytona, but his dad ended up beating him out of it. They told him no, don't. I think Lee Petty told the officials and told Big Bill Pran, told them that, hey, no, he needs to earn this. Don't hand him one. He needs to earn a win out of it. But I'm saying probably about 100 to 150 more if he had actually had that situation, had actually had some time to run a little bit more. And then also, you got to take into consideration, too, the 200 wins were at a time when NASCAR had as many as 60, not 30-some as it, what it is today, but 60-some races a year for some of these guys. They were racing in all sorts of places across the South. A lot of these places, they weren't even considering places out west during that time. A lot of these were around the South and Mid-Atlantic. And that's where Petty picked up a lot of his wins there. And so I think that, you know, it's really shortchanging the king on this. I think he's a little bit upset about it, and it's almost as if NASCAR kind of gone along with this, and they're saying, let's put Kyle Busch out here and let's really give him some PR about it. But again, I just think it's almost a slap in the face to the king of NASCAR racing, and that's pretty petty, and some people may say that Richard Petty, 200 wins, he was swindless from 1984 on to his retirement in 1993. That's true, but we're talking completely different setup of cars by that time. Petty, most of it had left him by that time, and they were still trying to hang in there for the fans' sake, and he at least presented a face on the sport during that time up until his retirement. And everybody always talked about the thing of when Dale Earnhardt was going to finally get the 7 championships. Well, he did get the 7 championships eventually. And that's what made it so interesting between Richard Petty and Dale Earnhardt. And now you throw Kyle Busch into this mix, and you try to make it sound like 200 wins total for 200 wins in the Cup for Kyle Busch, and it's not that at all. So people really need to be between the lines on this. It's almost fueling a feud almost that really didn't even exist right
now. You talk about some slaps in the face. We're talking with Rod Mullins here on NASCAR podcast here on AFP. So some slaps in the face for a couple of NASCAR legends being left off award lists or dropped from award lists, Hall of Fame ballots. Take us into this story, Rod.
Well, the big one, I guess, to me, in a time of where you're looking for a female driver, so to speak, and you know, Danica Patrick came in and raced on the NASCAR circuit for several years before she finally retired, but way before Danica Patrick, you had Janet Guthrie. And Janet Guthrie made several starts in the NASCAR series, and she was actually the first female that put her footmark and, you know, her handprint on the sport itself to say that a woman could actually race. Of course, she raced on the Indy circuit at the Indianapolis 500. But what is, I think, troubling to me is the fact that they dropped her, or at least they had dropped her nomination or her suggestion for a nomination after only 1 year for this NASCAR, I think the leadership award is what it's called. And they dropped her after 1 year, which I really think that if NASCAR is wanting to promote a female driver, now's the time to start doing it, because you don't have a Danica Patrick out there. You have a Janet Guthrie, who is a legend. Plus, you've got a young lady that's now coming up in the ring, Callie Deegan, who I just got word this past day or two, that she's going to race actually at Bristol. She's going to race some ARCA series races this year. So she's already beginning her climb to the top. That's just a slap in the face to that young lady who's trying to make a name for herself. She's already won a NASCAR Wheeling Cup Series race, and she's already getting some popularity out there. But it's an even bigger slap in the face to Janet Guthrie, because she's the one that provided the opportunity for a woman to be there in the sport. And now it's kind of like NASCAR is turning their back on it, so to speak, and saying, we don't want you there. And then the other person that's actually getting a slap in the face at this too was Kirk Skelmerding. He was former crew chief for Dale Earnhardt, helped him in a majority of those races when he went and was able to go and win like his, I think, fourth, fifth, maybe his sixth championship in there altogether. But he put together a string of some really great championship runs for Dale Earnhardt. He's always nicknamed Captain Kirk by the gang of the pits, because he seemed to know how to command and how to keep Dale Earnhardt under control to do this. And they dropped him after 1 year, and he was in the Hall of Fame. But there's some things in there where some people feel like maybe he is a crew chief, couldn't be in there because he kind of left the sport. He tried to drive for a little while, and he didn't leave the sport on very good terms. And so there's some people thinking maybe he doesn't deserve to be in there, but I think he does, because he was, I think, one of the vital, integral parts that Dale Earnhardt needed to win those championships, at least in the late 80s, early 90s.
So we've been talking about how NASCAR is shooting itself in the foot with some smacks in the face to some legends, certainly. Let's get back to some good news, some feel-good news. Let's get back to the track and back to the short track as NASCAR returns to the short track at Martinsville. And get us ready for this. This is different kind of racing. It's tighter racing. It's more controlled, but out of control at the same time. So get us ready for Martinsville.
Well, for Martinsville, it's the great paperclip, if you want to call it that. It looks like a paperclip. Slap, very little banking. It will wear the rotors out. It will wear the brakes out. The driver has to be very conservative when it comes to using the brakes. A lot of the time they run wide open. They kind of slow down as it turns as they go. But, you know, they've got to hold on to that traction. They've got to protect that groove, especially that inner groove of Martinsville Speedway. Now, Martinsville is probably hoping this year, more than anything else, that they are going to have a race. And I think they will have a race, because remember last year, I think right toward the end of March, first part of April, they had a big snow. So I think they're hoping that it's going to be a really good weather forecast for this weekend. And I think you're going to see a lot more aggressive driving kind of leading up to the Bristol race in probably about, you know, 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks. They still have to go to Texas, a 1.5 speedway, and then they'll come back to Bristol on April 7th. So I think we're going to get a better idea in a more kind of squeezed in, contained track, especially with Martinsville, what it's going to be like in Bristol. I think we got a picture of what Martinsville could be like at the Phoenix race when they raced at IFM. But we're talking tighter borders. We're talking a little bit more closer, and we're going to see how this new aero pack is going to do when they get to Martinsville, and we'll especially see how well it is when they get to Bristol.
From a weather perspective, I'll give the weather forecast for the listeners out there. I'm about 3 hours north of Martinsville. It's going to be this weekend. It's going to be in the mid-60s in the central Virginia area. I'm heading about 3.5 hours south of Martinsville. I'm going to Columbia, South Carolina for some NCAA basketball. It's supposed to be in the mid-70s there, so let's just divide them out and do some quick math there. I'm sure, Rod, your wife might help us with this. Probably 70 degrees and sunny. So you know what? That's the opposite of snow. And that is perfect weather for some NASCAR racing.
Yeah, that sounds great, too. And I also have to drop this in here, too. The Clay Valley Speedway, former Lonesome Pine Speedway that I've talked about a little bit before here on the podcast, where Alan Kulwicki and Dale Earnhardt, Harry Gant raced at one time or another, they have converted that track completely over dirt. And so for anybody that's listening, north of Southwest Virginia, there in the Waynesboro area and Charlottesville, there's going to be now a dirt track down 81 and, of course, up 58 coming into Coburg, Virginia. And they are hoping to pull in some really great dirt track drivers this year. They are opening this coming Saturday, so the weather's looking good for that. And their debut there at Clay Valley Speedway, formerly Lonesome Pine Speedway. So it looks like it's going to be a good weekend altogether for racing.
That sounds good. So we'll look forward to talking to Rod about this weekend. And it's not going to be too long, Rod, before we're sending you down to Bristol. And look forward to all that coverage you'll be giving us from the first Bristol race of the spring, right?
Yeah, Bristol's going to be interesting. A lot of changes to Bristol. And we'll have a couple articles up here probably in the next week or so, kind of posting things about some of the changes at Bristol this year. Not really in format, but in for some ticket sales and some different things that they're going to be offering this year. So Bristol is going to prove to be, I think, another big stop here on the circuit, especially coming up in about 3 weeks.
All right. Well, so we missed Rod last week because I was at the ACC basketball tournament. We're all caught up now. I feel like the world's back on its axis. So, Rod, I want to thank you for your time today.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thank you.